This audio is brought to you by Muslim Central. Please consider donating to help cover our running costs and future projects by visiting www.muslimcentral.com/donate.
Okay, we're going to get started, inshallah. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Bismillah. Bismillah wa alhamdulillah. Wa salatu wa salam ala rasulillah. Wa ala alihi wa sahbihi wa barak wa sallam. So, we're looking at hadith number 7 in the 40 hadith collection of Imam Nawawi, rahmallah. If people want to just take a quick minute before we jump into it. We started this one last week. So if you want to pull it up on your phone, hadith number 7, you can just Google Nawawi hadith 7. Or Nawawi 40 Hadith 7, if you don't have the book. We can also just take a quick minute as we're doing that. You can just turn to the people next to you. I know everyone doesn't know everyone else. If you can take a minute to introduce yourself, share your names, just how your day is going. And then we'll jump right into the text, inshallah. But go ahead. The people want to just introduce themselves to the people sitting around them.
Just like normal. Okay.
Yes. Yeah,
the other one was like too much.
No, it's okay. Okay, should we get started? Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. So, if people want to pull up the text, if you have it on your phone, we were looking at hadith number 7 of the 40 hadith of Imam Nawawi. Last week, we talked about the narrator of the hadith, Tamim ad-Dari, who was a Christian man, who some people say was a monk, a priest, that converted in the 9th year after Hijrah. He had a lot of interesting characteristics associated with him, or instances. He was the first person to bring a lantern into the Prophet's mosque, so to literally bring light into the mosque in the evening times when it's this dark. It wasn't like a lit place. He had a commitment to Quran, the Tahajjud prayer, the late night prayer. He was the first person under the caliphate of Umar ibn al-Khattab radiallahu anhu, who was allowed to kind of give public kind of advice talks to people weekly. And then that increased under the caliphate of Uthman ibn Affan radiallahu anhu. He was doing it twice a week. But what he said was his conversion to Islam after the 9th year of Hijrah means that this was also something that was being discussed towards the latter part of the Prophet's life. Like this conversation now that is deemed to be one of the foundational narrations of the prophetic tradition. If you missed last week, we could talk, you know, it's up online, so you can look into it. And then we talked about the word nasiha itself, some of its etymological root, what does it mean? Because quite often it's associated just with the idea of giving advice. But we offered like linguistically distinct definitions of it, right, in terms of kind of purity. when you have in Arabic, for example, this root, nasaha, it means to kind of purify or cleanse, where they talk about like the purification of honey, for example, is one example we used. Or a second example is to like kind of mend things or bring pieces of things together. So when a tailor like sews something up, right? And then a third definition here is that we can understand things, what they are, by understanding what they're not. So this word, nasiha, denotes like the opposite of kind of fraud or disloyalty or these kinds of things. So all of that gets rooted in this word that isn't just about advisement or counsel, but it's about this idea of sincerity in these ways. And so now we're going to look at it from the specifics of the categories that the hadith mentions in particular. So can somebody read the hadith just so we are kind of building a relationship with that part as well, if you have it in front of you. The English and the Arabic, but you can read the English or the Arabic. We'll have someone read one and then the other. This is hadith number 7. Yeah, go ahead.
I'm going to read the English because even though I'm Arab, I don't read. On the authority of Tamim al-Dari, may Allah be pleased with him, the Prophet, peace be upon him, said, the religion is nasiha, sincerity. He said to whom? He said, peace be upon him. Said to Allah, his book, his messenger, and to the leaders of the Muslims and their common folk.
Great. Can somebody read the Arabic? Yeah, go ahead. So we're looking at hadith number 7. Exactly. Okay. So we're looking at a different hadith. It's the hadith number 7 is Adinu Nasiha. That's where it's going to start from. Does anybody have that in front of them? It starts An Abi Ruqayya Tamim ibn Aws ad-Dari. So just to read the hadith in Arabic, an Abi Ruqayya Tamim ibn Aws ad-Dari radiyallahu an, anna Nabiyya sallallahu alayhi wa sallam qal, ad-deenu nasiha qulna liman, qala lillahi wa li kitabihi wa li rasulihi wa li amati al-muslimin wa amatihim. And so you want to get into the place too where even if you don't have Arabic as a primary language, that you're engaging the hadith in its original text, because a lot of the nuance will get lost in translation. But also there's just barakah in like knowing the actual words of the Prophet alayhi salam. You don't have to speak Arabic to be able to understand like the meanings of the hadith. And you can pick up Arabic English dictionaries, or whatever language you speak primarily, that gives you a breakdown to understand. But there's also just a big kind of emphasis on, if you are claiming words are the words of the Prophet of God, that they're not paraphrased, right? That you're saying the exact words as best as you can, so that you're not attributing something to him that he didn't say necessarily. And this happens quite often, right? You know, people who they might have heard something and say, I think there's a hadith that says this or it says that. But building a relationship with these texts, especially because they're foundational, it helps to just add a multitude of benefits as we engage our relationship with the divine. Do you know? So here now there's different groupings of nasiha being attributed to different categories of individuals, right? To Allah, to his book, to his messenger, to the leaders of the Muslim, and to the common folk. So there's these five groupings of people. So what I'd like for us to do is think out here now, like the framing of this hadith, that there's scholars who would say that this is the hadith in its entirety that makes up the entire foundation. If you know this, this is it, you know? There's some who would say it's equivalent to a fourth of like what this religion is about. Do you know what I mean? They put a lot of emphasis on this hadith in particular. But essentially, it's giving us now these broader categories of how it is that we relate to the different kind of groupings of what we can relate to. Allah, His book, His messenger, the kind of leaders in a society, and everybody who's not a leader. This is fundamentally how you engage with every aspect of anyone you can have interactions with. Do you know? And the qualifying term here is one of nasiha, right? This idea of having a sincerity. It's like an honorable conduct, you know, a loving trust. When the Prophet says, adinu nasiha, it's emphasizing in this way. That doesn't mean that the deen is only this thing, but it's a big part of this thing, right? Like, if I said to you, you know, love is sacrifice, it doesn't mean that healthy love is only about sacrifice, but we're saying, like, this is a big part of it. Do you know? If I said love is kindness and you're in a place where you're trying to understand what love is, you would say it's not an equal sign, but it's a big part. So if the love I experience doesn't have kindness to it, there's probably a problem in calling that love. Do you get what I mean? So if the deen lacks sincerity towards these five recipients of sincerity, then there's probably something that's lacking in the implementation of one's deen. Does that make sense? And so we want to go through these five recipients of our individual nasiha to be able to think out, like, how do we kind of cultivate that now for ourselves individually, you know? And the companions, they already understand some of this at a base level because they're not asking what is nasiha. They understand it, but they're not thinking about it just in the prism of one definition of advice, but thinking about it more broadly, right? And so the Prophet says, lillahi, to begin with, right? That this is for Allah. How do you think one has now this qualifying application in the relationship with the divine? Like, if I was to sit and think for myself that the foundation of this religion is rooted simply in this, that if we were to summate everything that the Quran is about, right? The literal, like, first verse of the Quran starts with Alhamdulillah, right? And the very last page, the last verse of the last chapter, it ends with Nas, mankind. So the whole idea is to understand that everything that comes in between now is a means that's connecting God to humanity, right? You start literally, Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen, that all praises to Allah, the Lord of the worlds, right? And then you end at Surah Nas, like literally with the word Nas, right? Make sense? So this is what it's about. My recognition that God is Rabb, He is my Lord, and I'm Abd, I'm a servant of God. That's what Islam is about. So here now, there's this base understanding of how we relate to our Creator. And the first thing when the companions say, قُلْنَا لِمَنْ, the Prophet ﷺ, he says, لِلَّهِ. So if one was to now start to distinguish, what does that look like? How do I start to actualize that in the course of my relationship with the divine? Where we have like these verses that we looked at last week to break down the word nasiha, right? That tawbah is qualified, tawbatan nasuha. Right? It's like a pure, like, repentance back to God. Do you know what I mean? There's like that element of kind of just sincerity when we're talking about this. So as we look at each of these buckets, you know, how does that look? If one was to think out, like, what does this mean for me as a practitioner? The sincerity to Allah, what would that kind of evoke? What comes to mind? So if you can turn to the persons next to you and just talk about this a little bit. And you want to be comfortable in having these conversations, like with yourself as well as the other. If you haven't been here before, the idea isn't to just kind of say what's the most correct thing or to avoid speaking because you're worried about saying the wrong thing, but being in a place where you start to deepen through reflection and contemplation. What does this mean in terms of its application, right? Because if you're a Muslim, everything goes back to God fundamentally. Do you know what I mean? So how do I relate to God is a very important question to understand. And what does it look like if I actually have a relationship that's rooted in this qualifying term, a sincerity to God? Like, how do we understand that to actually manifest itself? So it's not ambiguous, but there's some metrics of assessment to it. So if you can turn to the person next to you, if you don't know them, they trickled in later, you trickled in later, just exchange some names. And then how does that look? Sincerity to Allah. Like, what are some of the things that come up? And we'll come back and discuss. But go ahead.
Absolutely.
Okay, so what are some of the things that are coming up for people? Like, if I was making nasiha to Allah now, like, how would that look? How does that manifest itself? Yeah.
We talked about a few things, but, like, it all came down to, like, effort. Like, putting in the effort to build that relationship and connection. And through setting intentions. And, like, really, like, being, like, having the right idea of what you're doing. And, like, really going in deeper on that. And not just doing things to do things. And also, like, she mentioned, like, having more khushur when you pray and, like, things like that. Like, making an active journey towards God.
Okay, so here we can kind of extrapolate something, right? Like, the role of God in my life is based on what exactly, do you know? And when I'm doing some of these things, who am I doing them for? So we want to actually think about this in terms of a list that you can have metrics that you can reflect on both tangibly as well as things that you reflect on like conceptually and theoretically. Because some are going to have outward manifestations and some are going to have inward manifestations, right? Prayer, if we were to take from that, for example, one of the forms of having this sincerity to the divine is that you do the things that God asks you to do. And it has like a tangible element to it in that there's not a lot of obligations in Islam, nor are there a lot of prohibitions. But if the base of a relationship to Allah stems from one of these things, like there's a bunch of different things, like nasiha is a big part of this, that's sincerity. So how do I show sincere conduct to the divine if I'm doing other than what it is that he asked of me to do? Do you know what I mean? Or I'm like willfully engaged in things that he has said to not do, for example. Does that make sense? You can stem this now into a qualifying term that isn't necessarily just about like the fulfillment of burdensome obligation, but the root here can like stem into a lot of different kind of reflection points as well. Because if I'm not doing what Allah has asked me to do, or I'm doing the things that Allah has asked me not to do, what compels me towards those things? What do you think? Good, right? So this is Quran, right? أَفَرَأَيْتَ مَنْ اتَّخَذَ إِلَهُ هَوَى. Do you see the one who takes their hawa, their desire, as being their God? You know? Outwardly. Like, if you don't pray when somebody else has told you you're not allowed to pray, and there's consequences to it, there's not like a sense of judgmentalness. I'm not throwing my back against the wall to say, you don't know why I don't do something. I'm saying you have to know why you don't do something. Because if you are now taking direction from elsewhere, you're taking from other than God, right? So a part of the sincerity to the divine in our tradition is that you don't worship anything other than Allah. There's nothing else that you become submissive to, outwardly or inwardly. So inwardly, if my nafs is in control, and it's telling me, like, to not perform the fara'id, and I'm giving in to base desire, like, that's what I'm elevating to the level of submissiveness to. Do you get what I mean? If I'm in a place where I have not disbelieved in God, but I believe in those that I elevate to a place that I take direction from the way I would from God, this is also a problem in the standpoint of nasiha to Allah. Does that make sense? Right? So, obligations, like the fulfillment of the fara'id, do you know? It's a God-centric religion. So, in the midst of it, there's going to be certain things that God asks us to do that we love to do, certain things that God asks us to do that we struggle with, and certain things that God asks us to do we don't fundamentally understand. But we're now putting that understanding of the divine in a place that is exponentially greater than anything that we can have of understanding. I don't have to like comprehend it for it to be true, right? Does that make sense? So one aspect, you do the obligations. Another aspect, there's nothing that you raise to the equivalency of being a partner to God. And that's not just in the form of idolatry or other things, but as we just said, right? You can take your own inner desires as being what you fundamentally submit to, you know, and that can be a problem. What else did we talk about? What does sincerity look like to God? Yeah. Yeah, go ahead, Rather.
Someone else came in and parked and sort of cut me off, and it was very easy for me to, you know, get upset, and then, you know, the possibility of cursing that person out was tempting, but I have gotten into the habit of saying Bismillah before, you know, getting on a bike, so that each following action is something that I can say I've done in the name of God. And so just reflecting on, like, actions and really wondering if, like, your actions reflect something that can be done in the name of God, or you know, yeah. Usually, when you ask yourself that and reflect on it, it's pretty easy. Whether that means cursing someone out or you know, just staying quiet and going about your day.
Yeah, amazing. And they don't have to be arbitrary, like methods through which we reach these conclusions. Like what you're saying is a part of the Quran, right? وَإِبَادَ الرَّحْمَانِ الَّذِينَ يَمْشُونَ عَلَى الْأَرْضِ هَوْنًا. Surah Furqan says that the servants of the merciful, they're the ones who walk on the earth with humility and grace. وَإِذَا خَاطَبَهُمُ الْجَاهِلُونَ قَالُوا سَلَامًا. And when the ignorant kind of speak to them, they respond with peace. You know? So if we draw principle from it, right, we have sincerity to the divine. We're in a place where we're affirming like what his book is saying. And it's a little bit different from the idea of how there's going to be sincerity to the Quran, which we'll talk about next. But we're affirming like everything that the Quran says about who Allah is, the attributes that we learned like from the text in and of itself, the ones that we don't know, but they're still there. Recognizing like from this is a sense of, here's where I kind of draw my instruction from, my guidance from. Do you know what I mean? But it's an aspect of sincerity that we can like kind of think out. If I have this sincere conduct, right? And let's like draw this out a little bit. Do you know? Like, what does that even mean, sincere conduct? Because you all, some came and had iftar with us after Maghrib. For some of you who've eaten here different meals, you're going to come to iftar in Ramadan, inshallah. You come to like Jummah prayers, we'll have lunch. Do you think we're going to give you like rotten food? Do you know? Yes, you do. You think we're going to give you rotten food? No? Do you ever walk in here thinking like, man, one of the Khalids probably spit in this before he gave it to us? No, right? You're not thinking, hey, they might have like had this sitting there for 2 or 3 weeks. Do you know what I mean? But you rightly are reliant on the idea that like these guys are doing this because they have a sense of responsibility and service to us. There's a sense of kind of etiquette that goes not into just the action being done, but the quality of the act in and of itself, right? So a part of sincerity to God is not begrudgingly doing the obligations or doing it kind of at the base minimum, but to be in a place where you have like what Radley is identifying through the initiation of the divine's, with the divine's name, is a sense of like God consciousness that then results consequently in the practical implementation of ihsan or excellence, like beauty in the performance of what we do. Do you know what I mean? We could come in here and you guys could be walking in and we could just be like plopping bagels in your hand and be like, why didn't you say thank you? Do you know? Or like Khalid and volunteers literally sit in the office an hour before, they hand cut every bagel, they like scoop things into like the plates, right? Make special dua for them. There's ihsan in this. Do you know what I mean? There's sincerity in the conduct towards you. That's what we're saying. How do you have sincerity in the conduct towards the divine? In like what you're bringing to the performance of your wudu, of your prayer, of like this kind of stuff, right? And then you just reflect on like, how do I have this embedded in my relationship with the God, like the God that created me and provides for me, when like I'm hesitant in, you know, using the restroom before I pray because I just don't want to repeat my wudu. So I'll stand like clenching everything, hoping nothing comes out. But it's like, come on, man. Like, what are you thinking about this hadith in relation to that? Do you get what I mean? Does that make sense? So sincere conduct, how does that apply to Allah? So the performance of obligations, the performance of other actions too, not worship oriented, but done with a sense of ihsan, real excellence, real mindfulness, real beauty, do you know, in the awareness of God. Like, what would God think if I yelled at this person? Do you know what I mean? What would God think if I was gossiping, backbiting? Do you know? And so here the prohibitions also come in, because it's not just about the performance of the obligations, but the staying away from what's forbidden. That includes like drinking and smoking up and this kind of stuff, but also being racist, gossiping, lying, backbiting. Where is there sincere conduct to the divine in those instances? What else did we talk about? Like, if we were to identify nasiha to Allah, like, how does that look for you and I? Yeah.
You spoke about having a sense of guilt when you're not doing things in a righteous way. For instance, when you're backbiting, or you have responded to someone out of a reaction, like you mentioned earlier, and feeling that sense of heavy guilt versus, I think it goes back to nefs lawama. That's the one that feels guilty
versus the one that's full of sin and just doesn't have that sense of guilt after doing these things. So that's very important to me. I'm trying to excel the sense of guilt rather than just not feel anything.
Yeah.
That is, and that can be a consequence of having actual sincerity, right? Because we could be sitting in the office and Khalid could say to me, Khalid, like this food is a week old, and I would say to him, it's all right, they don't say thank you ever anyway, let's just give him gross food. And he's like, no, I'm gonna feel bad. The heart is giving you indication that there's an absence of what's needed in the conduct of the relationship to be whole. Do you know what I mean? And you're paying attention to those signs, right? And if you get to a place where you're willfully able to do something that's gonna harm somebody, including yourself, right? This is a big part of this. Nasiha to Allah is not benefiting Allah. The premise is rooted in my sincere conduct to Allah is going to bring benefit back to me. So if I get to such a place where I am now not even feeling anything through the absence of sincere conduct, it's giving me an indication as to like the state that my heart is in, that I don't feel bad at doing things that I know I shouldn't do. Or God forbid, I feel good at like somebody else's misery. I like to make someone squirm when I see like the consequences of my gossip and the like difficulty it creates for them. Do you see what I mean? Does that make sense? How else do we understand this in the frame of sincerity to the divine? What would that look like? Like, good, sincere conduct to Allah.
You talk about sincerity as purifying. So I think if you're struggling to do something good and you keep struggling, you kind of are in that purification process. Does that come to it?
The whole thing is like a purification back to the self.
Yeah.
If you're engaged in, yeah, and that's what the enabling is of the sincere conduct, is that it's doing this thing, right? Nasaha, to purify. So when you're doing it, it's like remedying your own inside. Right, so to just run through a couple of things in the interest of time. So the performance of obligations, also extending this to like voluntary acts, right? Hadith Qudsi, which is a genre of prophetic hadith that says the Prophet has said that Allah has said, and it says what Allah has said. There's one that's hadith an-nafila, like the hadith that talks about the extra acts, the nafl acts. And in this, it gives like a framing for those who are the awliya of Allah, like the close friends of God, the ones who do things to them that they shouldn't, they're like at war with Allah. And then it talks about how the obligations are means of getting closer to God. And then the extra acts are what increase like love, right? So sincere conduct to Allah is also rooted in this thing of love, do you know? Like if we're sitting in that room cutting up iftar and we're like, these miserable people, I hate all of them, I hope no one comes, that's like feeding into it, do you know? Versus if you look forward to actually listening to what God says, that you look forward to like not doing what God has asked you not to do, but you bring an element of love into it as a way to manifest like sincere conduct, right? And there's not like a hidden kind of recipe to this. This is what this hadith is saying, that these mechanisms you do beyond the fara'id, that's what increases love. So when you're thinking about, hey, what's like the minimum I have to do? Maybe in some situations, that's what's going to transpire, right? Like you have a short window of time to pray your prayers, you pray the fara'id. But if all you're doing is only the obligation, then it's going to feel burdensome. If I get to a place where I'm not thinking about what I have to do, but what I want to do and how I add upon it more and more and more, we don't have to like provide iftars here. We don't have to do halakat. We don't have to do certain things. We don't have to do iftars every night in Ramadan, right? Why is one of the reasons that we do it? It's because we love you all and we love being with you all and we benefit from it. But there's elements of love that make it go a lot easier, like staying up till certain hours of the night, like doing all these other things. That's why, like, if you were born in a Muslim family, you know, and you had a mother that made suhoor for you in the morning, why did she wake up before you woke up? And why did she eat after you ate? And whoever did this for you, if not for love, do you get what I mean? So the element of love that becomes present in this is critical to understand. And how do I start to think about my relationship with God through a prism of love and not just something that's intangible? Do you get what I mean? Does that make sense? Other things that we want to be able to think about here is that within the prism of worship, that's really important, that a big part that you might think is obvious is that you actually like believe in Allah. Do you know? This is not an inherited religion. So you gotta like think, what does La ilaha illallah mean to me? You can know the words and you can comprehend the translation, but the translation and the knowing of it doesn't mean that I actually believe in it. And La ilaha illallah, when you have that belief, it then assumes a lot of these other things, that I believe in Allah and then I believe in everything that comes with that consequently. So who I know Allah to be is through his book, right? Through his messenger's sunnah. Not like grandma told me this or like my dad said this to me. And sometimes people weaponize religion, right? You know, it's haram for you to like do this and that, when like clearly it's not haram. Do you know what I mean? Right? You can't marry someone outside of our culture. Where does it say this in the Quran and the Hadith? Right? Where, if anything, it shows us like the opposite of this. Do you get what I'm saying? And so you start to think out, okay, what does it mean to like actually believe in Allah, and how a part of that is also believing Allah and what it is that he has told us, his divine promises. A lot of this becomes hard to do, not because it's complicated, but if you don't read the Quran, you're not going to be able to know what it says, right? And you just think within yourself, like, regularly, when are you engaging the text and reflecting upon it and trying to understand from it? You want to be in a place where that sincere conduct is rooted also in what Radley is saying, that you have a remembrance of the divine, like as best as you can wherever you go. The Prophet alayhi salam, he's described, كَانَ رَسُولُ اللَّهِ يَذْكُرُ اللَّهَ عَلَى كُلِّ أَحْيَانِ, that the Messenger of God was remembering Allah always, to the extent that the dua that you make when you go into the bathroom is غُفْرَانَك, like your forgiveness, O Messenger of God. And one of the reasons they say why this was the dua the Prophet made upon leaving the bathroom is because two things potentially happened. He was seeking forgiveness from Allah because he went into a place where he couldn't remember the divine, right? Like you don't do dhikr in the bathroom. Or because he was so habituated in doing remembrance of God that he made like some kind of dhikr there and is seeking forgiveness for it. Allah knows best, right? But it's a regular part of it. And how does that remembrance look? Not just like rotely regurgitating litanies on your fingers, right? But getting to a place where you're engaged within a sense of the presence of the divine informs my actions. You know, I took my son to Michigan with me this weekend. I was speaking at a conference, and my wife was really supportive as best as she could. She loves my son. So the idea of like he and I going away makes her happy, but also makes her sad. She wants to like have my kid around, right? It was great for me because I had now like a friend to hang out with, you know? I like spending time with my son. Now, when I'm taking my son places, in my head, every place we go, I'm also thinking, like, if my wife knew I was doing this with our child, right? Or if I go to a conference or someplace on my own and I'm walking around in certain places, I'm thinking constantly, I think Medina and Kareem would love to eat this. I think Priya would really like this place, right? But they're on the top of my mind in a lot of different ways. This is how the Prophet remembered Allah. Not with burdensomeness, but with a sense of love. If I'm eating something, and my son and I, we went to this Yemeni brunch place in Michigan, right? It was amazing, alhamdulillah. And the first thing that he says to me is, Baba, I think Mama would really like it here. Do you know? Why is he thinking that way? My daughter came home on Friday, and my son is really into Mr. Beast. I don't know if everybody here knows Mr. Beast, right? But he's like the most followed YouTuber in the world, you know? And he has like a candy brand called Feastables. And so my daughter walked home with one of her friends from school. Then she came and she said, Kareem, where are you? And he came and she said, I got you this like thing. And it was a new flavor of a Feastable. And Kareem's heart was just like, thank you, Didi. That's so amazing. And then we went to this like amusement place in Michigan. And he won like all these tickets at these games. He like got a bunch of stuff. And he said, I'm going to give this to Mama and this to Didi. And this one I'm going to keep for myself. I want to be like, you ain't give me nothing, man. Right? But this is what I'm trying to, like, this is remembrance of the ones that you love. He's 8. Who is he going to remember? You know, when we went to Cape Town, both him and his sister said, is it okay if we get this for this friend? Or for our classmates, their consciousness is rooted in what their capacity to have consciousness about can be rooted in, right? You and I are built in a way where our wiring allows for us to be conscious of the divine. We can be in a place where we iterate explicitly, Bismillah, even in riding a bike, and then getting to a place where now someone confronts me and my ego isn't what's dictating, but the remembrance of God dictates my conduct. Do you get what I mean? So here's like part of that sincere conduct, that we have a mindfulness or a remembrance of Allah, right? And the idea of dhikr is that your self-talk builds up perception. So when you're doing these like adhqars, it's helpful because now your mind goes back to this. Because in order for you to remember something, it means that your mind has to be empty of it in order for you to have to bring it back, you know? And if you only think about Allah in matters of tribulation or trials and difficulty, then you're not in a place where he's going to come to mind at moments that are not challenging. And now there's like other things in front of you and you have like goodness in your life. How are you expressing gratitude in these ways and appreciation when you're not even thinking about the divine, let alone thinking about what's pleasing to the divine? Other things that come is that you want to be in a place where you like love the things that God loves and you dislike the things that God dislikes, right? And the people who embody the characteristics of these actions, you're in a sense where you have like sensibility around it. Do you know what I mean? You don't want to make justifications for people just because they're in positions of power. Do you know? I mean, may Allah make things easy for anyone who's in a state of distress. These guys literally are like, I went like as close to Gaza as you possibly could go when we raised funds to deliver aid. Like what you understand the Rafah border to look like right now is not even what you can imagine the number of people that are there. And there's people who fundamentally are validating and justifying the massacre of all of these individuals. Do you get what I mean? You cannot have sincere conduct to Allah if you're not in a place where you also don't dislike that. Do you understand? It can't be enough that you just earmark it as, well, that's wrong. But like when you really have kind of tribulation against something or just like kind of angst or anger, it should be doing something to you. Do you know? Like, you shouldn't be in a place where everything just feels normal, fundamentally, and you become desensitized to it, right? I said to Amira today, the number of kafiyas that I see people wearing has dropped substantially from, like, before New Year's time. What happened? If anything, like, escalated violence has increased, not decreased. So where does it all go, right? And how do we understand that through sincere conduct to Allah? You want to be in a place also when like there's fundamental things that are being compromised upon that have to do with the divine. You know, I was walking by some people in our office the other day and someone made a very callous comment that they thought was just joking, that had to do with like somebody else's belief in Christianity, you know? And you could see like the person just didn't know what to do in response to it. You know what I mean? Like our book tells us, Surah Al-An'am, that we don't mock people's religious beliefs, do you know? So now if you see someone mocking someone else's religious beliefs, how does like the command of God being violated upset you in your heart? It's not just enough that like somebody is disrespecting us for our religion, but somebody is disrespecting somebody else. Like, what does that mean? Do you know? Am I sit back and like I'm a bystander? Do I become upstanding to it? You are in a place where you like have sincere conduct because you thank God for everything he's endowed you with, the blessings. And that necessitates understanding God is the giver of the blessings in the first place. You know, this religion posits itself off of a theology that Allah is the owner of all things. Do you know? So how do I show gratitude? First, like, I got to recognize that something is there that I'm grateful for. At the, like, base minimum, I have a cup of water that I can drink water whenever I want to. That's crazy to think about. Do you know? And if you juxtapose it to other challenges that come up in our lives, it's not to belittle them, but, like, what excuse do I have then to not honor the fara'id when there's people who they don't have any of this for days and they're in a place that what they drink is like polluted of this and they're still getting down and prostrating in the rubble of homes, right? They're honoring that relationship as best as they can, using it as a way to like inculcate movement. But a part of sincere conduct to the divine is that you're grateful and you're thankful for like what it is that you've been given. You sit down and you reflect. You appreciate what it is that he's bestowed upon you. And the important part of all of these things is the recognition here that this is like for my benefit, because there's not, Allah is ghani, right? He's self-sufficient. He's free of need. So your doing is not going to bring benefit to the divine. It's going to bring benefit back to you. Does that make sense? Yeah. So what I like for us to do, I know I'm talking a lot, it's just like a list of stuff, but you like take some of it and extrapolate from it. Like, how do I recognize these things as a mechanism now of how I relate to God, right? The fulfillment of his commands, a belief in him, the abandonment of what he has prohibited, engagement of a recognition of gratitude and thankfulness to him, loving what he loves, hating what he hates, right? Being in a place where the notion is such that, like, God is very centered in my life. Does that make sense? So what I'd like for you to do now is just turn to the persons next to you. What makes it difficult to do that? Like, what gets in the way of making it hard? Because if anybody asks you, like, what is Islam about, right? A lot of us are going to just jump to, like, practices. Muslims pray 5 times a day. We fast in Ramadan. We do this and that. That's a, like, consequence of something. You have to have iman before you have Islam, like in terms of iman is faith and Islam is practice. So what makes it hard or difficult for us to connect at the level of faith in this way, right? Because the iman in Allah then becomes the foundation for then all of these other things, thanking Allah, following his commands, like doing this other stuff. So what makes it hard to observe some of these things that could be understood as metrics of sincere conduct? If you just turn to the persons next to you, or what makes it easier? Like, what makes it more helpful to kind of engage in it so we can kind of relate to each other? Because it's not easy. You live in a secular, godless society, right? That's not a knock on anybody. But they don't run things, entities and institutions, based off of like the presence of the divine. If anything, quite often we see the absence of mercy and compassion and love and hope and just a lot more egocentricity than God-centric stuff, right? So think about it in that way. It can't be self-deprecating. You can't reach the conclusion and be like, because I'm a bad human being, right? No, then you're giving Shaitan victory. Like, really think, what are the obstacles that make this challenging? What gets in the way? And what are the things that make it easier? What make it exciting to do? Like, enable me to do it? And if we can talk for a couple minutes, then we'll come back and discuss. But go ahead.
Their effects are obviously because all things are you can't see
I thought about that.
Okay, so what are some of the things? What are some of the things that get in the way? What are some of the things that make it easier? But maybe we can have a few people. And then, yeah.
I think, so we talked about how just like, in general, living in this society, it's very difficult to pray. In the sense of like, there's not like a masjid on every corner. You can't just walk in and pray. And it's also like difficult to make wudu. And like, if you're like a student and you work, right? So there isn't like spaces catered for that. And then also, like, especially now after like the whole Palestine Gaza thing, it's even harder to pray in public because you feel kind of like, okay, like this might be taken a little weird or whatever. But I think in general, like the society is like structured in a way, like you said, like it's a godless society, and it's structured in a way to make you forget God and to like throw things at you constantly all day long that get in the way of that. And so that's like one thing that like personally I feel as well here. Like, it's very difficult to, like, have that, like, consistency and making sure you do it, even though there's all these, like, obstacles that get in the way.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm sure a lot of people can relate to this, right? Mm-hmm. You're quite often the only Muslim in an office space, the only Muslim in a classroom, the only Muslim frequenting certain spaces, and that can be very hard as a minority, right? And acknowledging it and recognizing, like, what it does. Other things that come up for people, like that are helpful or things that get in the way. Yeah.
Well, the Quran, for example, it affirms that Allah is the best of planners, but obviously, you know, we can't all see that plan as it's being carried out. And so you see things that like in the world that break your heart, you know, and you think, how could Allah allow this? But you have to have faith in his plan. So that's an obstacle that gets in the way of, I guess, like fully devoting yourself.
Yeah. And like theological questions sometimes to get answered with specificity, sometimes we just have to say, I don't know, right? This religion teaches us to kind of think out and reflect on who God is, and then to take that understanding to make sense of the world. What happens quite often in the absence of reflections of the divine is we take like the world to then determine who God must be, do you know? And it then results in some of this kind of paralysis. You need people who can answer certain questions, right? Like Dr. Sherman Jackson is a really amazing Muslim scholar. He wrote a book called Islam and the Problem of Black Suffering, you know, because you need to be able to answer, why would God allow for slavery to exist? Why do we have like anti-black societies? You know, why do these things happen, right? Somebody who lost their loved ones and somebody who didn't lose their loved ones but still impacted or just wants to know, why is there like a COVID-19 pandemic? And it's not something that can be answered just as a platitude, do you know? To like just put your trust in God, you know, this is a test from God, this and that. People struggle because life gets in the way, and there's a deep need to be able to answer these theological questions in a way that when they're not, they can create impediments. That's why you can't just learn religion from like soundbite kind of, you know, TikToks and YouTube, etc., that become more entertainment than educational. But you pick up a book and you read it, you reflect on it, you sit with people to kind of contemplate and understand. You look at like the prophetic biography, the stories of the companions who live through real difficulty and tribulation, but they're still in a place where their faith perseveres, not because their faith is something that they're holding on to in a fleeting way, but it's helping them to understand what it is that they're rooted in. Do you see what I mean? What else like comes up for people? Things that are helpful, things that are not, yeah.
Yeah, so something we discussed in the group is that kind of nature always, like, you know, whenever you sit and look, and at a certain point you're going to go, wow, like, subhanAllah, you know, this is, like, so beautiful, right? And that's kind of something that always helps me just, like, always remember Allah is when I go outside and see the sunrise or see the sunset. It's, like, you know, it's much bigger than me and much bigger than the phone. Like, especially in New York City, it's like, you know, I live in Jersey City, so I can see like the skyline, and it's like crazy because like there's so much going on in that city, but bigger than all of that is the sunrise and the sunset, and you're like, wow, subhanAllah, you know? So that's something that's like always helping me like remember Allah and stuff. So I think,
amazing, yeah, exactly, yeah. Right, and it's a simple thing. It breaks away from the monotony of the day. You go out, you find like solitude, not running away to the mountains, but just look out your window and watch the sunrise, the sunset, and it helps to bring now a different sense of presence and perception that becomes a mechanism, right? And so we want to think about these things. What enhances, what are obstacles, what else like can help in this regard? Yeah. Yeah, 100%, right? Like you turn to God and you ask. This is like hadith, when the Prophet says in a lot of hadith about reviving your iman, right? Jadidu imanakum, like, you know, renew your iman. One of the things that he says is ask Allah to like increase you in your iman, like make dua for this specific thing. Do you know? The opposites of these things also bear impact. Right? So if I'm present in places that are devoid of spaces to pray or people who encourage it, then the presence of some of that is going to be helpful. Do you know what I mean? Like if engaging in solitude or looking at nature has this impact, when you're engaged in things that are just unnatural, like it's not going to be like a helpful thing. Do you know what I mean? Making dua can be helpful, then the absence of like dua, that's not going to be helpful. Do you see what I'm saying? So like a couple of other things, like if you're the only Muslim in a lot of the spaces you frequent, then you got to have like friends who compel you to reach like a few steps ahead of where you might be sometimes, right? So like if this is a consequence of me being in a place where most of the people are not informed by God, then I got to find some time in my day and my week where I'm regularly surrounded by people who are people of God, you know, and they have some element of God consciousness to them. And I'm in a place where that's kind of replenishing and rejuvenating. Does that make sense? Right? Because you know what it's like. There's not a lot of things that all of us in this room can say that like we can share in common, you know? I would assume that every single one of us in this room knows what it's like to be the only Muslim in a space. Even sometimes when you're around Muslims, you might be the only one that's like a practicing Muslim, do you know? But you fundamentally know what it's like to be in a place where people just don't believe the things that you believe in. How could that not take a toll then and then inform like conduct that you have, right? So you don't want to think about these things in self-deprecating ways. You want to just think about what actually is there, detangling them to then be able to say, well, I want to deepen in this. I want to get to a place where aspirationally I'll make wudu in front of whoever. Do you know? I'm going to like pray and I'm just going to do it. Do you know what I mean? Like we talked about kibbutz at Jummah on Friday, last Friday. I don't know how many people were here. Arrogance, right? The Prophet has a companion by the name of Abu Dajana, who before battle, he used to like strut around. He'd put a red bandana on his head and like be like showing, you know? And the Prophet would say, you know, Allah dislikes this kind of walk, except in this situation. Do you know what I mean? Because he's showing with a sense of pride to these people, I'm not embarrassed by who I am, you know? But he's got like a group of people that are also there reinforcing, you know? So you want to think about your relationship in a way strategically. Why would it not feel the way that it feels? Or why does it feel the way that it does feel because of some of these things? Does that make sense? So next week, a couple of things just before we break for Isha, and then we're going to have the second, the Ramadan class. We'll talk about like the remaining four groups a little quicker. On Monday, this building will be closed next week because of President's Day. So we're going to do the iftar and these two halakas in my apartment building in the second floor lounge, right? Which I think a good number of you have been to before. It's on 23rd Street and 3rd Avenue. In the summer, we were doing halakas there. Just by a show of hands, how many people could actually make it out there on Monday, 23rd Street and 3rd Avenue? It's the same times, yeah. Yeah, great. And we'll send out more details online. If it seems like it's a smaller group of people, maybe we'll move it to my apartment, but we'll be in the second floor lounge and we'll go through some of these things. So the idea here is like start with this, you know, how am I displaying sincere conduct to Allah? And you want to like go through an inventory, you know, how much of my day is in this place where I'm like engaged in the fara'id or I'm leaving it behind? How much of my day is engaged in like what's prohibited and leaving it behind? Am I bringing anything else to the level of like a partner to God? You know, like who is dictating and defining what it is that I do in the ways? How am I expressing gratitude and appreciation or recognition of the blessings that I've been endowed with, right? That are not just an expression from the tongue, an expression of limbs. Like how do I use my talents, my skills in the way God intended me to use them? You know, the different things that I've been gifted and given. When we talk about the Quran, one of the things that is about sincerity to his book is that it's referring to like all of the revealed scriptures, that there's a belief that there was text that came before the Quran. The Quran is the last testament, but it has many different facets to it, one of which is going to be just about like reading the Quran. Do you know? And just like how we did today, you want to think like what gets in the way of reading the text and like reflecting on it. So between this Monday and next Monday, those are like two of the things I would suggest, just spending some time in your own reflection. Like how do I have that sincere conduct that the hadith is talking about, right? Ad-dinu nasiha qulna liman qala lillahi is the very first thing. How you relate to God is clearly going to be a foundational aspect of this religion. Do you know? And you'd be surprised how many Muslims there are who don't ever even think about who God is to them. Do you know what I mean? Especially those who are born into Islam, because it's just like, my parents told me we do this. Like people do this. If you don't do this, what will somebody say? It's like removing an aspect of just kind of exhilaration that only belief can offer. You know, like faith and conviction that makes that prayer a little sweeter, that makes the observation of something like a little bit more enjoyable, that makes the abandonment of a prohibition something that's done with ease, because faith is the basis of it, right? Not like, what can I get away with? Because now my mom and dad are not here and I can just do whatever I want to. But I know why I'm doing what I'm doing, rooted in a conviction that then gives me strength and energy. Do you get what I mean? Does that make sense? Okay, so we're gonna take a pause here. We'll pray Isha, and then at 7:30-ish, we'll start the Ramadan class and go till like for about an hour or so. So this next Monday, people are gonna join. We're gonna be in our apartment building because this building will be closed. Oh, tomorrow the building is also closed. So if you had plans to be here tomorrow for Dr. Murmur's Halakha, I don't know if we're going to do it on Zoom or not, but we'll send out an announcement about it along with when the building closed. But because there's a winter storm tomorrow, the public schools are all closed. So our university follows a lot of their precedent. So the building is going to be closed and everything will be remote tomorrow. So don't come here showing up for something tomorrow because it won't be open. If people are going to leave after Isha, on Saturday, we're doing a film screening with our Latino Muslim group. But the film screening is open to everybody in the community. It'd be really amazing if people can show up. It'll be from 5 o'clock till 9 o'clock. There'll be dinner. The film screening is going to talk about just the establishment and propagation of Islam in Chiapas, Mexico. We have some members of our community who have gone there on and off over the years. There's a growing Muslim community there. We get about 5 people a week who take their shahada here, mashallah. A good number of them are from a Latino background. And then there's a lot of people who are not converts, who are born into Latino families, and they just don't have a lot of space. So similar to our Black Muslim Initiative, like you want to come to learn about this experience, to show support. There'll be free food also, and you get to meet a lot of really amazing people. So that'll be Saturday from 5 to 9. And if you could spread the word, there's an email going out. I think it already went out at 7. So you'll get all the details on it. So people can be there for that. We'd appreciate it, inshallah. Okay, so somebody call the adhan. We'll pray Isha. And then right after, we'll start the Ramadan.